anyone who's surprised at the big weekend the new film Hustlers had at the box office probably shouldn't be. Not only does it star popular women like Jennifer Lopez and Constance Wu with drop-ins from Cardi B and Lizzo, but it got very good reviews at the Toronto International Film Festival. What's not to like?
Hustlers is based on the true story of a group of women who danced at a strip club together and later drugged and scammed some of their wealthy Wall Street customers. Directed by Laureen Scafaria, the film is already generating awards buzz for Jennifer Lopez. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking Hustlers on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Kroger. Did you know 1 in 8 Americans struggle with hunger? Yet 40% of the food produced in the U.S. gets thrown away. Kroger believes that if just 1/3 of that wasted food could be redirected to people in need, it would more than cover unmet food needs across the country while helping to protect our planet. That's what Kroger is doing through their Zero Hunger, Zero Waste Foundation. Last year alone, Kroger donated 325 million meals to local food banks. It's part of their goal to achieve zero hunger and zero waste by 2025. Learn more at kroger.com/ZHZW.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair today, we're incredibly happy to be welcoming back Christina Tucker of the Unfriendly Black Hotties podcast. Hi, Christina.
Hello, hello, friends.
So I saw this in Toronto at the film festival. It's now opening kind of right away, which is sort of always a fun sequence to observe. But Glenn, you were in Toronto but didn't see it there.
Right.
What did you think of the film?
You know, I think reasonable people can disagree about whether or not J-Lo deserves an Oscar nomination. I think it is indisputable that her skincare regimen should win a Nobel Prize. We toss around the word luminous. We toss around the word glowing. She looks amazing. There's an opening dance that she does where it stars her hamstring.
Yeah.
She is just fantastic. We're going to talk in the coming weeks about the film Joker and how desperate that film is to speak to the current cultural moment. I think this film speaks more directly and more effectively and less effortfully to what's going on right now because it is breezy. It is so much fun. It is just pure entertainment with a point of view. Imagine if they made Showgirls without the camp, because it's got some of the trappings of Showgirls, right? You've got the shopping montages and the shoes and the furs and the champagne popping.
Right.
But it's got a much leaner, simpler story, and you have a cast that can actually act.
Yeah. Well, and I think also the men are largely irrelevant to this film and what they think is largely irrelevant. And I think that's one of the things that makes it an unusual film about women, even among women.
Yeah. I mean, I don't honestly know, and I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say, because I don't know if we'd be talking about this film that as much as we are and as much as the culture is right now, if not for that J-Lo performance, which is so assured and instinctive. You just forget how good she is until she delivers something like this.
Yeah.
I just had a great time.
Yeah. Christina, what did you think? I have heard a rumor that you have already seen Hustlers twice.
I had the time of my life the first time I saw this film. I saw it alone the first time and then said, no, I need to bring my friends. Yeah. I need to see this with friends. Like, we're going again. We're going to the Studio Movie Grill. We're getting the Hustler's Punch. Like, we're having an experience at this film. Yeah, it was a ton of fun. I think we've been referring to it as a period piece because it's so beautifully from the music, the clothes, from 2007 into like that mid-aughts period. Mm-hmm. It really just nails the look. It makes me think that I should be, I don't know, fully rimming my eyes with black eyeliner again.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I know that's a terrible idea, but J-Lo looked amazing doing it. Mm-hmm. So like, what's the truth here?
It's a very big movie for hoop earrings.
Yep.
Huge for hoops. Huge for hoops. And yeah, I think the central friendship at the core of this film really just holds it together and makes it something, I think, a little more emotional than just a bunch of strippers who scam a bunch of men, which I was already in, let's be clear, at the scene.
Well, and that central friendship being Ramona, played by Jennifer Lopez, and Destiny, played by Constance Wu, who you know from Fresh Off the Boat and Crazy Rich Asians and some other great work. Stephen, what did you think of this film?
I had the most antisocial possible experience. I went alone at 11 o'clock at night.
You know what that is? That's a little creepy. A man alone at Hustler.
And There is no wrong way to see this movie.
There isn't.
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. I had a great time. I think that I agree with everything everybody has said. It is very, very faithful to this article on which it's based.
Yeah.
It's based on an article in The Cut by Jessica Pressler called The Hustlers at Scores. And like that article, the movie centers on kind of a conversation in hindsight between the writer of an article and Constance.
Played by Julia Stiles.
Played by Julia Stiles, not doing very much in this movie, and Constance Wu as Destiny. And she's kind of telling some of the story. You're getting a sense of that this is a story told in hindsight. And this movie plays out a lot the way the article does. And if I have one kind of criticism of this film, I think...
How dare you?
I know. I think it peters out at the end. I think, like the article, it has kind of told its story, and then it doesn't necessarily, like, have a big landing to stick. So if I have one somewhat negative thing to say about this movie to prepare for, I didn't necessarily think that the last 20 or 30 minutes of it held up quite as much as the first chunk, in part because it is resolving the story of a crime spree that is naturally not necessarily going to end with, like, and now we're going to go do more crimes.
Well,
even though in a way I kind of
Sure. Yeah. And I think the other thing is, the thing that these women basically did was they began to take men out for drinks, eventually began drugging them, and then would sort of, while they were very incapacitated, run up their credit cards, take them back to the strip club where they would spend a ton of money because they were barely conscious. And if the women could kind of get their relevant information out, they could run up their credit cards, and then the women would split the take with the strip club. The women who had brought these drugged men back to the strip club would then get a share of the take, and the club would get the rest.
It's a slippery moral slope that the movie engages with.
And I think one of the things that I thought about when I watched this was, in no way do I think it's acceptable to drug or roofie anybody. I want to be completely clear about that. But it asks you to engage with the question of, how are these women supposed to feel about the men who treat them as they do when they are working as dancers? Very early on, you see Constance Wu referred to as Lucy Liu by a guy. I mean, these men are racist towards them. They're abusive towards them. They're very, in the same way that I don't think it's acceptable to drug or roofie anyone, I don't think it's acceptable to be inappropriate and disrespectful to people, including strippers. So it's kind of like, you're in a very gray world all of these people. And I think you're encouraged. You know, Glenn talked about it speaking to the cultural moment. I think one of the things it's speaking to is in this post-recession period, which is really how this all started, when the business at these strip clubs fell off, that these women found a different way to extract money from men who previously had come and spent a lot of money at these places anyway.
Well, and you see the balance of power shift between these women and these clubs. And I do think that's a really interesting part of this movie that I had never really thought about before. In the beginning of the film, you see what it's like for a worker at this club who was having to tip everyone. It was having to
tip the DJ. Yeah.
Like, you're the dancer and you tip the DJ.
Exactly.
And then as the movie rolls on and the clubs are struggling differently and the economy is different, suddenly these women are, the club is commodified in a way that it wasn't before. And that's just a really interesting, you see power shift in this movie in ways that I found fascinating.
There are a lot of men in this film who are victims of a crime. It is hard not to feel like they have also done something bad, not something that deserves what they got necessarily, but they have also done something wrong. And watching the kind of the interaction between the women and these dudes, and I should mention Kiki Palmer is also in it and is a lot of fun to watch because I haven't seen her in anything quite like this before. We mentioned briefly Cardi B and Lizzo. They have included a lot of Cardi B and Lizzo in the marketing. You don't see them for very long, either one of them. I think they both make the most of what screen time they have.
Yeah, I think the film is strongest when it's simply asserting that these guys are jerks and they're being abusive. But it's amazing how much of this film kind of runs on the audience already knowing that, already taking mm-hmm. that as read.
Mm-hmm. Right.
After all, these women are not Robin Hood. They're not robbing from the rich to give to the poor. They're robbing from the rich to become slightly less rich than the rich people.
Uh-huh.
And so we find them falling into the traps of materialism. So the film is, in that sense, trying to have its cake, eat it too. But one thing that struck me is how that's the conflict, because they do not want to spend any time on having any kind of personal inner conflicts between these women. They want these women to seem united. Even when something happens that should create a split, it doesn't really. It turns on a dime like that, because this is basically Spice World in that sense. Yeah. This is girl power in a strip club.
More interesting than
I thought.
Yeah,
these are complicated friendships.
Yes.
And this digs deeply into these friendships.
And Christina, I want to hear from you about Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, boy. I think the most appropriate thing I can say on this podcast would be that J-Lo is bringing what we like to call in the biz big top energy to her performance. I think she is truly luminous, as Glenn mentioned. There's a long shot of men unpacking a tanning bed to bring into her apartment. I don't know why it needed to exist, but I watched it and felt, yes, thank you for bringing this very important point into this moment. And I think her motivations, and I think, as Linda mentioned earlier, you know, kind of just how men are not really thought of, especially in the relationships between the two women, that she is a caretaker, that she wants to take care of the girls that she works with, she wants to take care of her own daughter, she wants to take care of this family that she's created. And there's that beautiful scene where they all have like Christmas together when they're very high on scamming and they've made a bunch of money and they're all giving each other these lavish, luxuriant gifts. And I said, well, that's my mood board for my Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want Christmas to look like for the rest of my life.
Well, and I think it's very easy. You know, we talked earlier about it being a very big hoop earring movie and some other things. But I think it's very easy for that kind of look to come across as somehow tacky or whatever. That tackiness is mostly in the way that films often look at it, more than necessarily coming from who these women in real life would really be. But one of the things I like about this is there is a glamour to the presentation, especially of Jennifer Lopez, that I think she is allowed to be a glamorous, in control character in a way that often women who work in clubs like this in films are not afforded. There is a shot of her on the roof of above New York where Constance Wu comes out. And I'm going to say this even though I'm on the line about whether it's a spoiler. But Jennifer Lopez is wearing a gigantic fur coat and literally opens up the coat and says, come inside my fur.
Uh-huh.
And it's so
iconic.
It's so dirty in this way and yet also so sophisticated. And it feels so warm.
It's also
and
kind.
Friendly,
it is also
and it's
a kindness.
Kind, and also, like I said, so dirty. It's so good at that kind of balance, I feel like. And so good. I want to also mention there's a piece in Vulture about some of the choices of music.
Yeah.
About why Jennifer Lopez's big strip number where you first meet her is Fiona Apple's Criminal.
Yeah.
because they are super serving its audience.
But what a smart, interesting choice to make, I feel like.
Yes. And the fact that they didn't think they were going to be able to get the song Criminal, and then Jennifer Lopez called Fiona Apple personally and asked her.
Sure.
I'll tell you that.
Sure. I mean,
amazing.
That's what you would do.
There is at one point fairly early in this film, you are introduced to a guy very briefly who is Destiny's boyfriend. And I'm like, who's this guy? I don't want to meet this guy. I don't want to get the. He's gone from this movie in like 40 seconds.
Yeah,
and that's and at that point, it was especially. I was like, oh no, I'm in the right hands.
Right.
Yeah,
it's remarkable the direction in what it isn't. It doesn't leer. This is not the male gaze by any stretch of the imagination. There is no creepy shots climbing up a body. It is about reflecting the power, and that, as Stephen mentioned, the power differential. That certainly.
Yeah.
Gets overturned in this film. It's remarkable.
And I think also that the actual skill of the dancing is respected. I encourage you to seek out. There is a video of Jennifer Lopez learning, a long video of her training process. And remember, she's a very accomplished, incredibly fit professional dancer. And when you first see her learning the pole dancing, you realize, even for an incredibly fit professional dancer, this is very hard stuff. And when you see her being kind of awkward and ungainly when she's first trying to do it. I think it's so interesting that they've made that footage available in addition to the final film. Because yeah. you really get a feeling for, and there's a moment in that video when Jennifer Lopez says that Cardi B, who really did strip for a period of time in real life, said it took years to learn how to be good mm-hmm. at it, because it's dancing like any other dancing and it has skill involved.
This is a film where I would watch a full length making of documentary.
For sure.
And I will be making one, so that's kind of I'm currently looking for work and I think it's going to be that.
And I think that speaks to how fully enjoyable and immersive an experience it was to watch. I mean, I went home and it's like, okay, well, the first thing I got to do is read this article. And sometimes with movies that are based on real life, I feel the urge, like, I'm going to now go back and read up on this story and find out all the things that this movie made up, all the things mm-hmm. that this movie faked. And this really didn't have it. It's so true to it. I think the Constance Wu character in the movie is softened considerably.
I agree.
The woman in the article is much flintier, mm-hmm. less comes off like she's being pulled along.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think the movie is doing some work to make that character more sympathetic than she maybe reads in the article. But
I think that makes sense,
but
too.
But it feels so true to the story. If anything, seems to dig for more truths about these people even than the article does. And I loved the article. I could not recommend this movie more highly.
And I think it was very interesting to see it in the context of the film festival, because we saw so much there that is about thinking about capitalism, right? Mm-hmm. And thinking about not just capitalism, but the position of extraordinary wealth and what it does to people to be around and to aspire to extraordinary wealth. Extraordinary wealth in the sense of, like, you should wear fur coats, you should have incredibly fancy cars and jewelry and all that stuff. I mean, I think that one of the things the film asserts is merciless capitalism begets other kinds of merciless behavior mm-hmm. in ways that are ultimately not that surprising. And that if you can be incredibly unkind and unfeeling toward people in capitalism, it facilitates people being unfeeling to each other in other ways. I think that's what the movie is asserting. You can decide whether you buy that or don't buy that. But I do think it's an interesting film about wealth and money, which you're going to see a bunch of stuff this fall that's also about wealth and money in ways both funny and serious, I think. And I do want to say before we go, I think just in general, the visual style of this film is so smart. Yeah. And whether they are in that world of kind of the club and the dancers, or when they go to, let's say, other locations and other kind of styles, it's so, I think, smartly visualized.
Right.
Yeah. It feels so loving and thoughtful, and the music is so good, and it's just chef's kiss, really, to this film.
Absolutely.
That's what I have to say.
And I loved seeing it be both really popular and get really good reviews. Yeah. That's a very happy development to me. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Christina at @C_GraceT. Thanks to all of you guys for being here and talking about this joyful and lovable movie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a minute and you're so inclined, please do subscribe to our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday when we will be talking about Downton Abbey, or as Glenn likes to call it, something has happened to the pudding spoons.
Malcolm Gladwell is one of the most well-known thinkers in the world. But he says a lot of his fans don't know that he's Black.
White people don't know. Black people always know.
How do you feel about that?
I find it hilarious, first of all.
Malcolm Gladwell on race, pop culture, and a whole lot more next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.